with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, considerations, help you lead a more positively minded life. And part of having a more positively minded life is being able to look at people around you and understand them, and wherever you can, to put a little love in their direction, you know? And that means that you have to overcome certain prejudices, certain attitudes, things that you don't even know you have. Like, I'm always learning that I have prejudices that I don't know about. I'm always learning that there are things and attitudes I have that are based in some cultural ridiculousness that I grew up with. Recently, though, I've been looking at the world of immigration. And I've been thinking about some of the people who come here. Now in Europe, immigration is a great problem because there is a great deal of crime associated with immigration. Immigrants who are beyond the law because they're not trackable very often will commit crimes in gangs that it's really prevalent in Europe. It happens a lot. Not as much, I think, here in America. But recent immigrants face difficulty adjusting to the United States for a host of different reasons. And that includes coping with traumatic experiences in their native country, wherever they came from, overcoming the cultural and language barriers, encountering discrimination. The effect of immigration on psychological and social well-being are especially profound for certain populations, including children, women, individuals with disabilities, those with limited financial resources. Despite this critical need for mental health services, immigrants face significant obstacles to receiving any kind of health care. There's nobody out there who really understands, and if you're what they call an illegal alien, which always makes me think you're from Mars, if you're somebody who doesn't have the papers but you're here and you're working here, it's much worse. Where do you go? How do you get fairness treated? What happens to you? We're going to talk about that today because in the studio we have with us Didam Atahan. Didam, welcome to WBAI and welcome to New York.
Thank you very much, Armand. It's great to be on your show with you.
Didam Atahan is a therapist. She's a Gestalt therapist licensed in the state of New York. Also, she's an immigration psychologist. She's somebody who specializes in helping people who are immigrants with some of their difficulties. Didam speaks a number of languages. Didam, how many languages do you speak?
I speak 5 languages.
What are they?
Turkish, my first language, native language. Of course, English, French, Luxembourgish, and German, some German. And I'm also learning Spanish because it's a very important language to speak in this country.
French, Spanish, German. And you made a distinguish between Luxembourgish.
Right.
And Germany. Is that really a distinct language, even though it's an idiom? It's a dialect?
It is. We can call it a dialect, but Luxembourgers wouldn't be happy with that.
They
are very proud with their language, and they read and write. I mean, there are books in Luxembourgish, and they have their literature, so it is considered as a separate language. From German.
Just because I love to do this.
Yes.
If you were in German and you were to say, it's a nice day, the sky is blue.
Yes.
How would you say that in German? It's a nice day, the sky is blue.
Das ist eine schöne Tag, I would say.
Yeah.
And in Luxembourgish.
Wait, you didn't say the sky is blue.
I would say the sky... I'm so sorry, I'm totally lost.
This is known as Radio Beginnings.
Good. All right.
Welcome to our show. Here we're going to do it all over again, right?
Okay.
The sky is blue. How do you say that in German? You don't know how to say it in German. How do you say it in French?
I'm totally blocking.
Look at that. Now, that's very important. The reason I ask you, Didam, and the reason I wanted to see this, is under pressure, this is what happens to so many people. Here you are, somebody who fluently speaks 5 languages.
Okay.
Wait. And under pressure, you lose your mind. You lose your ability to do it. Now let's consider what happens to immigrants. when they come here. When an immigrant is here, they're not thinking in one language. They're thinking in two, sometimes three languages. Let's say if somebody is here from Haiti, for example.
Right.
They're speaking a totally different, at the same time as you're talking to them, they're translating. Well, how does it happen in your mind? If I'm speaking English and I say, can you help me?
Mm-hmm.
That's a phrase, right?
Right.
How do you say, can you help me in French?
Est-ce que vous pourriez m'aider?
How would you say it in German?
Kannst du mir helfen?
How would you say it in Netherlands? Netherlands, no.
Luxembourgish.
Luxembourgish.
Kannst du mir helfen?
Wow, that's very different.
Right.
Even has different inflection.
Exactly. And now I can tell you in German, the sky is blue as well, because I recovered from my momentary blockage. So, yes,
well,
it's
I want
very
to hear
different.
It, since you worked out of the sky.
The Himmel is blau.
The Himmel is blau, of course. All right, so now I want to go back to this. When you say, can you help me?
Yes.
In French.
Mm-hmm.
It's very different than if you say it in English, and very different than if you say it in Turkey, right? Now, your original country is Turkey.
Absolutely, it's very different.
So if how would a Turkish person say, can you help me?
In Turkish, you would say, bana yardım eder misiniz?
Okay, now, if you were to ask somebody for help, and mm-hmm. if you're Turkish, what is the meaning of that? What is the psychological feeling of asking for help, as opposed to if you're French, mm-hmm. and you're saying, would you please help me? And let's say you're asking somebody to help you find something you're looking for.
Right. Well, if I'm asking it in Turkish, I would feel like it's a more of a request of help, like I'm in more in need of help. I would feel that. But the way I said it in French was I was putting much more distance between me and my request, and I wasn't feeling as helpful. So in the Eastern cultures, it's okay to be less, to be needing help, as opposed to in the West, you have to be more individualistic, like a culture like in France, compared to Turkey. I mean, these are all relative, of course. As you come to New York, you're more and more individualistic, I guess, in America. But relatively, I think French people are much more individualistic. And for them, asking help would be this way, would be a way of communicating their need, but not, it wouldn't be so okay to communicate their helplessness. So they
so
would do it
person,
in a more formal way.
So if a person from another culture comes to you and asks you to help them,
mm-hmm.
for many people, I mean, like for many people, it's a great difficulty, right?
Right.
Because it's like just to ask for help is mm-hmm. a big deal. There's a great stigma about psychological help in most countries.
Absolutely.
Right? So that's even second.
Mm-hmm.
For most of you out there who don't know, there's a tremendously high incidence of suicide among people who immigrate to America. If you think about what is the cause of that, why would there be such a high rate of suicide? If you think about it, I mean, you know, usually there's a reason why you left your country to come here in the first place. Life was not so good. Then you get here and you have a tough time. And if you have a tough time because you are one of these people that we mentioned, either you're disabled or you're poor, or you're a woman or a child and you don't have the kind of chances or you don't speak their language and you're exposed to prejudice, you could get so demoralized.
Right.
Now, this is where, you know, hopefully they run into you.
Yes.
Okay, what happens at that? If somebody says they want to kill themselves, Dietam,
well,
what happens?
Well, that's a tough question, because if somebody says they want to kill themselves, this is a client of mine, whether an immigrant or not. I would not like to label people as immigrants either. I have to mention that, because this is a very sensitive topic, and every an immigrant is a person as well. So if this was a client of mine, I believe I would feel like I'm hearing this from my sister or my brother. And it's the same sadness I feel for my family's life, somebody wanting to kill themselves. They must have a good reason, I would think. And I would try to walk them through the darkness into a better place. And there are ways to do it, and by strengthening their resources with immigrants. And, you know, first of all, I would empathize with them, and then I would start to use some techniques, working through their anger, working through their feelings, because as they come to us, they already experienced some traumatic circumstances, these people. They have a reason to leave their country most of the time. It can be extreme poverty. It can be human trafficking, you know. We come across people with amazing stories. So it can be exposure to war. I would like to give an example there. I worked with immigrants from Iraq in the 90s as I was in Turkey, who were escaping from Saddam. Those were the first refugees and immigrants that I worked with. And the way they came to us, they were already gone through all kinds of torture, all kinds of pain. So you start from like minus...
Who's the you?
The you is the therapist. I start from not from like zero, but I start from minus 90 to bring these people up to a level where they can function. And this starts with understanding.
I could just imagine. See, there you are in Turkey, and you're a young woman, and you get these cases of people from Iraq who've been tortured, beaten, you know, and I'm not saying that this is what happens to everybody from Iraq. I'm not saying who caused it or what caused it, but the main thing is, by the time they get to you suffering. And somehow in Turkey, these services come to you, and you could give them your heart, you could welcome them in, they're okay. Now, in Turkey, are they required to be licensed, or must they be registered? Do they have to have, can a person be an illegal alien in Turkey and get services, or must they be a registered immigrant?
Right. Well, the thing is that the immigration laws are very different in Turkey.
Yeah.
In America and in Europe, in the United States and in Europe, they have to be very restrictive because people are wanting to move into these countries, and they have to be very restrictive about this. But in Turkey, if somebody comes from Iran or Iraq, at least in the 90s, we didn't ask for a visa. These people needed help, and Turkey actually embarrassed numerous refugees from Iraq, and at that point, Kurdish people. And so there wasn't a, you know, legality problem
there. So there's not
there.
That distinction, you know?
No, not, it's not like in the United States today.
And it's also, I mean, but prejudice, there's prejudice all over the world. I mean, French people are very prejudiced in many ways. Again, not all French people, some French people are prejudice against Haitians who come to their country.
That's right.
And, you know, the Germans could be prejudiced against the Italians who come there. That's always there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that there's kind of, the Turks have a kind of a welcome because it's okay. It's like people are kind of passing through and you extend your hand wherever you can. I remember one of the best things I ever went to was I went to a Turkish annual dinner recently,
mm-hmm.
where the Turkish culture presented a bunch of beautiful things. But the people that I was sitting around were so welcoming, so embracing. It was one of the finest events I had ever been to.
I'm so glad to hear that, Armand.
Yeah, it was one of the nicest things. It's coming up again, too. I'm sure I'm getting another invitation after today.
Well,
now, part of what happens when they come to you, I mean, people come to you with their families, too. They are only coming to you because they have emotional distress. They're not coming to you to save their problems. They're not trying to get a job. A person's coming to you because they are, according to what you told me, they either have great stress,
mm-hmm.
anxiety, depression, the suicide risk, you know, and then there are the problems of being a woman immigrant or a woman who's an illegal alien. Now this, there must be another word, who is an immigrant who is without papers, you know, or a person who is an immigrant without papers, the IWP. I remember when I was a kid, WOP was an insulting way of calling Italians WOPs, but it meant without papers,
mm-hmm.
WOP. So without papers, people who are without papers, if you're a woman and you're a young woman and you come to America and you're here, I mean, aren't you just, don't you automatically get grabbed and abused and abused by just everybody in the system?
Absolutely. This is a possibility. And I see a lot of people like this. Possibly due to fear of deportation, because they have no legal rights. They don't know if they have legal rights, in other
right.
words.
They think they don't have legal
they
rights.
They think they don't have legal
so if
rights.
A woman is, if a woman is, in, is from another country and she doesn't have papers and she is raped,
right?
Where
right.
can she go?
Well, actually, there is a very useful piece of information that I got from an immigration lawyer, since I work with these people, and there is the Violence Against Women Act. If you make a search online, you will find this easily. And any immigrant, let's call them illegal immigrants without papers, can go there and look for their rights. If they've been through sexual harassment, if they've been through abuse, even domestic abuse within their families, these people can go there and seek for help. And they should do that as soon as possible.
And they're not going to get deported as soon as they go?
They will not get deported, and they will. They may gain rights as victims of domestic violence.
So there you get. Thank you for that. We're speaking with Dina Matahan. Dina Matahan is a Turkish, or I would say she's from Turkey originally, speaks five languages. She's a Gestalt therapist and an immigration psychologist. She works with people who have psychological problems related to being here and being in a country other than their own. She's done this both in Europe, and she's doing it here in the United States as well. The woman who comes to America, if you're a young woman and you're of that age, you probably were sexually treated badly in the country you came from if you have no money.
Maybe.
Probably you're there. You come here too, and now there's more than one reason. It's more than fear of being reported. It's something about the sexuality of many other cultures that's very different than ours. Isn't there a very thing about, you know, once you're touched... Mm-hmm. I know the problem of the Mexican migrant workers. Once you touch, there's something wrong with you. It's like you're contaminated.
Exactly.
Tell me about that.
In several cultures, I mean, just like the Latino culture or the culture I come from, if you're not a virgin, you're not a pure person anymore. And if you're sexually harassed and if you're not a virgin anymore, you may be considered guilty for that. And we hear a lot of killings like this, even in Europe.
Killings?
Absolutely. Honor killings. A woman losing virginity in a rape can be found guilty through her family and can be killed. Like, I heard this on the news a couple of months ago in London, a Muslim family, a girl who was raped by another Muslim person was, killed by her own father. So these kind of things even can happen.
Well, now, wait, we have to be careful here, because you did say Muslim, and this is not to cast...
This is not to cast Muslim. Absolutely.
Well, and you're Muslim, too.
I am Muslim, too, yes.
So it is not to say that this is what all Muslims do. It just happened to be a Muslim family.
Absolutely. This happens in Latino culture. This happens in many, I believe, in the Arabic world, in Turkey. It can happen. It can happen everywhere, I think. This is something against women. It's not a religious issue only.
It's a form of misogyny. You know, if you come to a different country and you're here, you get tossed between being acculturated and becoming part of the American culture, mm-hmm. and having your own culture. Many people I know form their own subgroups. You know, if you go out to Forest Hills, you could find entire communities where people live. Okay, here's where the Indians live, here's where the Pakistanis live, and they have subcultures.
Right.
Trouble with subcultures is that once you have a subculture, people, and something goes wrong, people turn against you, like the young man who recently had those killings, you know, who went on that killing rampage. It turns, instead of acculturation, many people stick with their own culture. It must be a very big conflict to say, I want to either give up my culture, like even my eating habits, even the things I do, the things I believe in, you know? How do you, as a Turkish person, eat franks and beans? Does anybody ever serve you a frankfurter? Have you ever eaten a frankfurter?
Well, as a Turkish person, you can eat each and every cuisine you like.
Okay.
And that's the great part of it.
So, but let's say you had a culture.
I totally hear what you're saying. Your culture is like your skin sometimes. And what I would do in therapy is I would I think it's very important to make clear what's cultural and what's not cultural in a person's behavior. And that can only be done by clarifying behavior, by looking at the reasons of the behavior. And in the work with the clients in therapy, we can make sure the client is sure about the sources of their behavior and analyze their own behavior and become aware of themselves.
Well, let me try to get this down to an example. Let's say a person says,
yes,
I should be quiet. And they say, you know, it's not right to speak up when you're offended. Now, that could be acculturation. That could be a part of a culture. You could have grown up in a culture where it wasn't right to speak up to your elders, for example. Or it could be part of your family. It could be that your father used that and enforced that cultural rule so that you wouldn't speak up to him. Or it could be part of something that you actually believe in. But I think what you're saying is you have to help separate a person from, is this a cultural value you want to hold, you want to believe in, you want to have? Or is it something that comes from more of a neurotic childhood past? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's important to know where this behavior comes from. Why do you choose not to speak up? Maybe it's taught in your culture not to speak up, and you're fully capable of speaking up. And once you understand this is cultural, you can start speaking up. And once you work through this in therapy, you can start speaking up. Whereas the second example, you were brought up very repressed. You weren't allowed to speak to. Then we take another route and we work on that instead of working on the cultural aspect of it.
What is a way, if you, I'm sorry if you don't mind, let's get specific, Dietam.
Sure.
Let's say you have somebody who comes into you who feels like they're just overwhelmed by the oppressors or the people who are prejudiced in a society, or a specific boss, let's say, and a person just feels completely overwhelmed, and you want them to see that the boss's anger doesn't have to do with them specifically, and you want to kind of get them to understand the other person's point of view as well as not take it personally, what would you do? What kind of technique do you have for that?
Well, Armand, as you know, as a Gestalt therapist, I use a lot of chair technique. And it's very important.
You hit the person with a chair?
Yes, I hit the person on the head with a chair. And then I call an ambulance. Well, actually, what we do is we take an empty chair and we ask the clients to imagine the other side, the other party, to be on the other chair. And we then, later on, ask the client to take that seat and be the other party. And that kind of gives an idea, that starts to give an idea what the other person is thinking, where they are coming from. And once you go through this process, it's a very deep process, and it can be done repeatedly, you understand where the other party is coming from.
Now, I know in Turkey, the empty chair technique, which was developed by Fritz Perls in Gestalt therapy, is very specific. And it's a technique whereby a person, when they have an oppressor, get a chance to face the oppressor, just as you're saying. And one of the ways that you do this, or a client would do this, is they would have, a therapist would lead them and say, here are two chairs. There's, you're in one chair, and I want you to be in that chair, and I want you to talk to this boss of yours who keeps talking to you in this derogatory way. And now you want to tell the boss exactly what you feel. Instead of saying, I hate you, or that, you have to tell them it makes me feel bad, and you help them identify their real feelings. Once they do that, you have two more parts to do. One is, who else made you feel like that? To make sure that you're not just identifying this boss with everybody else, your father, your uncle, your mother, and everybody else. So that's part two, as therapist, of you helping them out. Then comes this third part, which once you help a person express their feelings about how they feel in the therapy session towards an oppressor, you have them play the role of the oppressor. Now, this is a very important part of therapy, because when a person plays the role of an oppressor, they get a sense of where this is coming from. For many people, it comes from their powerlessness. A parent who's yelling at a child. When you play the role of the parent, you wind up saying, I feel powerless. I don't know what to do. When you're a boss yelling at a worker, you're saying to that person, you're making me look bad. It's about me. So you try to get an understanding of the other person's point of view. Now, having all three identified, where you have an emotional reaction to an oppressor, but you're now identifying what it is that you truly feel, instead of going numb, which is what most people do, and then you identify where this may have a history in your personal life, so that you make sure you're not overloading your reaction, and then you play the role of the oppressor, so that you can see what it's like from the other point of view, then it gives you a great relief. There you have a chance to kind of feel more at ease than just to feel somebody who's depressed and feels like killing themselves because they're so overwhelmed in the world. I mean, that's why I think this is such important work, but it's not there. I mean, people from other countries don't trust us. They don't trust if there's a therapist they can see. How many people know there's a Turkish therapist? How many people know that there is somebody who is Turkish, who is here in the world like you, who they could consult with, a trained professional, a trained licensed professional? And not only do they know that, they think that you represent the American culture, therefore, you know, are they afraid of you? So it's very difficult to find help when you're in a world where you feel so powerless. I remember once, it was back in the 70s, I went into a grocery store that was run by some people from, they were from Vietnam. Yeah, they were from Korea. And they were Koreans, and they had this little all-night convenience store. And I walked in, and it was the first all-night convenience store I had seen. It was right near Penn Station. And I said to the people who owned the store, aren't you afraid of somebody who's a dope addict coming in here with a knife and taking your money? And the man looked at me and he said, would you call the police? What would you do? He said, do you think that a man with a knife who's a dope addict trying to take my money is worse than having the Viet Cong coming into your kitchen? He said, we handle them. We can handle our own problems. And that was basically the first look I got at a culture within a culture that was just saying, no, we have to take care of ourselves. We can't reach out here. There's nobody else but us. So this is, I guess, what you deal with all the time. You deal with people who really don't feel like they can reach out, and the shame associated with it.
That is so true. The shame is a big part of not being able to communicate the problems, and the guilt, and all that comes together. And it really is a big barrier between seeking for help.
Yeah, and this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be talking more about this problem of being an immigrant in the United States, or being here now, looking for help. I want to talk to you about some of the things that are unique to a culture, because there's something you said to me before about culturally bound things that look crazy to the outside but necessarily aren't. And then I'm going to let you know about some very, very fascinating cultural phenomena. And then we're going to take your calls as well. My guest is Ditam Atahan, Gestalt therapist and immigration psychologist. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. This, my friends, is Eartha Kitt singing a Turkish song.
Üşküdar'a giderken aldı da bir yağmur. Katibimin satırızı uzun etey camur. Katibimin satırızı uzun etey camur. Katib uykudan uyanmış gözleri mahmur. Katib uykudan uyanmış gözleri mahmur.
shur kya ti ben men ben kya ti ben el kar shur kya ti ben me satare te palto ne güzel yara shur.
Üsküdar is a little town in Turkey, and in the old days many women had male secretaries. Oh well, that's Turkey.
Üsküdar'a giderken bir mendil buldum. Üsküdar'a giderken bir mendil buldum. Mendilimin içine de lokum doldurdum. Mendilimin içine de lokum doldurdum.
They take a trip from Üsküdar'a in the rain, and on the way they fall in love. He's wearing a stiff collar and a full dress suit. She looks at him longingly through her veil and casually feeds him candy. Oh, those Turks.
Katibimi ara iken yandım da buldum. Katibimi ara iken andım da buldum. Katibenim ben katiben el karışur. Katibimi kölele de gömlek ne güzel yaraşur. Katibimi ara iken yandım da buldum. Katibimi ara iken yandım da buldum. Katibimin ben katibin el karışur. Katibimi kölele de gömlek ne güzel yaraşur. Katibimi kölele de gömlek ne güzel yaraşur.
Üsküdar by Eartha Kitt. Üsküdar. Nice. That's a Turkish song, right? Have you heard that your whole life? Is that one of your?
Yes, it's a very traditional Turkish song.
What does it mean?
It's a place in Istanbul, and there were beautiful ladies in the Ottoman Empire time, sailing and walking around beautifully, and it was a very flirtatious and interesting time.
Interesting that I'm playing that when we're talking about the sexual harassment that gets suffered by Latinas just because a person is a beautiful lady. You know what I mean? In other words, I'm playing a song that represents the very abuse that we're talking about in many ways.
Yes.
So, you know, probably due to a fear of deportation and a lack of knowledge of their rights, a lot of immigrant women suffer the sexual assault, sexual exploitation, ongoing sexual harassment by perpetrators who view them as easy prey, unfamiliar, you know, with the English language, with its limitless supply of jargon. They can make it difficult for immigrant women to even know when they're being verbally downgraded. You know, they can't tell when they're being abused verbally. So it's very difficult for that, and they come to you with this. And I think that's one big issue. You as a woman who is an immigration psychologist, I think, Didem, who can help people deal with these sexual issues, I think is a very important issue. I think that's one big area. But also culturally, you know, like thinking in different languages. To me, that phenomenon, which we don't understand, that you have to think in different languages, that a person says to you, how, you know, what time of day is it? You have to, in ways, figure it out in your mind. You have to translate into your language. You first translate from the English to the Turkish, then you answer it in Turkish, and then you retranslate it back into English. Most of us who have the who live here, and you know, where English is our first language, and this is what we learn, we don't have to go through that. So those mental gymnastics. What right. does that do to a human mind? What does it do to you? It must put such a stress on the body, even though it becomes what you do when you're translating.
That is so true. It can be very stressful. Actually, there's a lot of research. I want to talk about a research study that was done on bilingual children. Actually, some of the kids were also speaking three languages, multilingual kids. And it turns out that when the kid learns the first language, it goes very well up to the, you know, third year. And if they start learning a new language around 4 or 5, there is a diminishing in the first language, the vocabulary. Both of the languages go a little bit slow, as opposed to having that learning one language goes much more faster. But at the end of the day, multilingual kids can think faster and can also adapt information much faster. So I believe it is a great thing that brain does this exercise between languages. And at the end of the day, it is great to speak many languages, and especially the people that you work with, and the fact that you speak their languages, because there are many ways of saying things in different languages, and so many things get lost in translation. And I believe that's one of the strengths of speaking different languages, that you can understand people in their own languages. And then understand how their brains work.
You know, very often as a therapist myself, I would be working with somebody from a different culture or a different language. And when it got down to where they were expressing their pain and they were saying what they really felt, I would ask them to say it in their own language, whether I understood it or not. Because the essence of the feeling would go along with what they, how they would say it. For example, saying, "I need you," in Spanish is one thing, and then saying it in English, the feeling isn't as accessible.
It is so true.
I think it's important that people work within their own, you know, if they can, work within their own language. That's a great help. The other thing I wanted to ask you is about what you told me about what happened to you in Turkey when people would come to you and they would have disorders that were culture-bound, process, things that people would do in their own culture that some people would perceive as psychotic. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I actually, there is an event, there is a client that I had, an 11-year-old little girl from Portugal, and that's when I was working with Red Cross, and she came with this problem to another therapist first, saying that she is having these hallucinations about witches and they are putting black magic on her.
Wait, she didn't say she was having hallucinations. She saw witches. She never used
witches.
That word, right?
Yes, she can't use that word.
Because I was there.
Yes.
No, because the hallucination is the judgment that we put on it.
Exactly. Exactly. You said it so right. So she said she was seeing these witches, and she believed that they were putting magic on her, black magic. And the first reaction of the therapist team was that, okay, this girl is showing some psychotic symptoms. So I really was curious, because we didn't see anything else abnormal in this girl's behavior. And, you know, I wanted to ask more questions about it. And it turns out that this was a very cultural thing. Witches and witchcraft was a part of her grandparents' life and her mother's life. And this has been talked all over the place at home. And she grew up with this. So there was nothing more normal than that for her. And she was not psychotic at all. So if you see these psychological and cultural differences, then you can see where these symptoms are coming from, and you can really interpret them more in a healthy way.
And even if it's not in a healthy way, it doesn't become as serious as what it looks like. I mean, I could give you a... I remember from some of the cultural disorders that we have seen, there are things like a thing called a ghost sickness, which has to do with a preoccupation with dead and the deceased, and it's frequently observed among members of many Native American tribes. They have this. Various symptoms can be attributed to ghost sickness, include bad dreams, weakness, feelings of danger, loss of appetite, feelings of futility, sense of suffocation. So if you're working with somebody who brought up in a Native American culture, you know, by Native American people, this would be a common thing. Whereas with a psychiatrist, they'd say medicate the person immediately. There's another one which I always thought was kind of interesting, which is called Piblotek, which was a kind of a dissociative disorder that happens in Taiwan. And during the attack, the individual tears off their clothing, breaks furniture, shouts obscenities, and runs from protective shelters or performs other irrational and dangerous acts. But Piblokok, when your person has this attack, which lasts about 30 minutes, it's common in Taiwan. So they say, oh, there goes an old Piblotek, you know, running down the street naked. And it's not like, let's take this person and lock them up for good. So there is, in each culture, there are things that happen to people. There's mal de ojo. Mal de ojo is a Spanish phrase translated into English as the evil eye. Children are especially at risk, and it's a little like you were saying. The symptoms include fitful sleep, crying without apparent cause, diarrhea, and fever in a child. And this is the belief found in some Mediterranean cultures that there is an evil eye that's on you. And it's just a little like you were saying. So one of the things that you have to do as a cultural psychotherapist, which you are, is to understand that whatever the person is going through may not just be what they're going through, right, but it may be normal within their culture.
Exactly. And as you say, this type of diagnosis, when you don't understand a symptom and where it comes from, if it's cultural or not, you can really lead the client not wantingly to a different path. Like diagnosing someone as psychosis and medicating them is really serious issue, and you want to help people, so you have to be very careful and, you know, be very clear about what is cultural and what's not.
There's one I remember from Japan, which is called Taijin Koifushu, which was where you believe that some part of your body, and it's a syndrome, I mean, it's an intense fear that there are parts of your body which displease, embarrass, or are offensive to other people in appearance. And this particularly relates to odor, facial expressions, movements, hair on your body. And it becomes such an obsession that you believe you are offensive to other people. You believe that people smell you all the time. And another, which I remember from Ethiopia, called Zar. And Zar was the experience of being possessed by a spirit, and the spirit would force you to laugh and hit your head against a wall and sing and weep and dance. So many people who would exhibit this behavior in Ethiopia would not be considered abnormal. See, this is okay. You know, you're hitting your head against a wall, and yeah, and you're singing, dancing, and laughing. It's just a case of Czar. How do we know all this stuff? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. There are so many of these things. There is sangue dormido, some of you, the sleeping blood. This syndrome is focused on Portuguese, the Cape Verde Islanders, and they have a real specific thing, which includes pain, numbness, tremor, paralysis, and convulsions. And what it's called is bad blood. It's called just sleeping blood, sangue dormido, and it's something you pass through, even though you have all these physical syndromes. Hey, we want to take some of your calls, too, and maybe some of your questions here for Didem Atahan. Didem Atahan is from Turkey. She is an immigration psychologist and has worked helping people dealing with their adaptation in America or just dealing with their problems, and she has people who speak one of the five languages that she speaks. So our telephone number here is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. Tomorrow, my friends, we're going to have a party here in the studio, just to let you know. We're having Scott Baum, who is a very, very interesting person. You could find him on our website, thepositivemind.com. Kent Robert Shaw will be here also. And I think Cindy Bertolotta will be back with us. And they're going to be all in here thinking together. And I want to show you what it's like when three top professionals, those three and me and one minor professional, get together and think together about something. So I want to just take, you know, I want to try to throw out what happens when people in the mental health profession really give consideration to an issue. If you have an issue that you'd like us to talk about, you can send me an email, armand@thepositivemind.com, A-R-M-A-N-D, @thepositivemind.com. Lastly, I want to make one other announcement for those of you. I think BrainLink, by the way, which is my server, mail server, are some of the nicest people around, B-R-A-I-N-L-I-N-K. They're great people. They're ethically wonderful. They're protective. So I use them as my mail server. However, since you go through me, through BrainLink, Yahoo, for some reason or other, has been censoring all mail from BrainLink. So if you have sent me a Yahoo letter and it hasn't gotten to me, call up my office and maybe I'll have you fax it to me or something, or send it to me another way. We're going to straighten that out with Yahoo because they're all Yahoos. 212-209-2900 is our number. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Armand.
Hi there.
And assalamu alaikum, Dilam.
Hi, salamu alaikum.
Several comments. One of them is that in some cases I would think that the compartmentalization that is the result of the immigrant's experience, the enforced compartmentalization on their children, can sometimes be worse than the situations that the immigrants themselves, experience. The other thing,
the compartmentalization
is,
by the parents to the children?
Yes.
Give me an example of it. Give me an example of
that.
Well,
I can give you my own experience.
Sure, good.
I'm in my 60s. Several of my grandparents came into this country as fake Christians, as fake Italians, because it was a convenient way for them to come in because they were not Christians, and they were from Muslim countries. So as a child, I was beaten constantly if in any way I said or did anything which would betray this, you see. And at a certain point in time, you become internalized to the point where, I myself, only through long therapy, let's say in the last 10, 15 years, have I been able to even admit some of this to myself, let alone to other people.
And what happened is you look at it, you actually feel the pain of it, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And the pain of identifying, you know, this, hey, wait a minute, guys, you weren't right to do this. Meaning that it was just plain sloppy and you were the victim.
Yeah. The other thing is as pertains to the Tsar, the Tsar is actually in northeastern Africa the exact equivalent of the Bembe. Except it's the opposite. It is a cleaning ceremony that is done to remove the negative entities from a space, from a person. It's a very common and almost daily thing in the southern parts of Egypt, coming into the headlands. In Ethiopia, I know nothing of it in Ethiopia from my own personal experiences there, especially since the Amhara are such, they are so Christian, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so therefore you would imagine they would be culturally almost forbidden from doing this.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it does, I mean, that's the source I have, and of course you may be right and they may be wrong.
Well, it's just, you know, depending upon the area which manifests. The Tsar is generally run by women. It is, as I said, basically the clearing of a space or a group of malevolent entities and the opening up for certain positive entities such as the king, Majid.
Well, let me ask you something. Since you've been here and you're an intelligent person who's done a lot of good research, do you believe that there are evil entities that need to be cleared out of the air by Tsar?
Absolutely.
You believe that's absolutely true. You
the
don't
same,
believe...
The same as the Bembe for the Caribbean people, you know, with the synthesized African combinations of Yoruba and other West African religions, and all the other folks, for example.
So what are you getting rid of? Are you getting rid of evil spirits? Are you getting rid of What are you getting rid of? What is it? What is it
well,
that you believe
if,
has to be
if,
cast
if
out?
If you would accept the present astrophysics explanations that 99% of what exists in the universe we cannot perceive in any way whatsoever, then one would have to admit that perhaps all of the various traditions in all of the peoples of all of the world, whether they be Roman Catholic or otherwise, concerning the unseen world, perhaps might have a reality. That is to say that we share this world with other entities who may in fact be more capable than we are, and that it may be our job, for example, not to worship them, as is often happens in the Santeria manifestation in this country, where people worship the entities, as opposed to coming out of the Muslim tradition, where as a son of Adam, you have the right to command. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And let me ask you this. Now, in your own life, have you practiced this so that you could clear the space to allow the more positive energy to come in?
Absolutely.
You know, that may be one of the best definitions of psychotherapy I ever heard in my life. You know, it may be exactly that psychotherapy is an effect czar, you know, except you keep your shirt on.
Yes.
Because in effect, you're getting in there to clear out whatever has kind of possessed you from the past. You know, and one form or another, of course we believe in that. Of course we do.
Italian Americans who are compartmentalized and who will not talk about Malocchio or the Maldao, that tradition is strong. And in fact, I myself have seen adults teaching their children how to give the evil eye.
I know. I want to thank you for calling in. What's your name, by the way?
Dr. Z.
Dr. Z, thank you. I know we've talked on the
yes.
air before. I love your voice. And I love what you have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Amon.
Sure. 212-209-2900. Did you want to say something, Didam, about that? Didam, did you want to say something about
yes,
that?
Yes. I was actually very impressed with Dr. Z's topic, the way that he kept his tradition and the way that he utilizes it today, and it really touched my heart, because a lot of times during the acculturation we lose our own culture, and it's one of our strengths. And I think that, as you said, it is a form of therapy, and there are so many aspects of our cultures that we needn't lose when we are learning other skills and being in different places.
It looks to me, Didam, that we could probably carry on this conversation and the phone calls for a long period of time, because I'm sure there are people who want to talk to this issue. I want to talk to this issue because I want to be able to experience my own conceptions, misconceptions, preconceptions. I want to examine them. I want to look. I want to see. So we're going to go a little further with this, not today. But if you wanted to reach Didam Atahan, you would do so by calling 212-757-4488. That's 212-757-4488. Or if you want to send an email, you could send it to me and I'll get it over to her. It's armand@thepositivemind.com. We have to be going soon. Didam, I want to thank you very much for being with us.
You're more than welcome. It was a pleasure. Thank
pleasure.
You.
And this is your first time, right?
Yes.
How do you say the sky is blue in German?
Ah, the Himmel ist blau.
All right. Thank you. How do you say it in French? No.
Don't test me anymore. I did what I can do today, Armand. Please don't push me there. It's so nerve-wracking to be here, sitting here in front of you already. So don't give me your tests.
Well, all right. You have every right to resist. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Here's a little something special for you. Let me see if I can find this little something special. Here it is. There we go. For you, Zuzu.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener-supported and non-commercial.
Thank you, Lawrence Block. I'm looking for my promotional carts, my PSAs, and I can't seem to find them. They're not here. They have gone into the cornfields, disappeared from our cart machine system. In fact, we have a new system that is underway. It's working through its shakedown phase, but I don't seem to be able to find them. I hope someone can retrieve them, because we have a lot of announcements to make throughout the day and into the evening and into the overnight. Right now, you're tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI, listener-sponsored commercial-free community radio. Coming up next, Light Show. I'll be your host for the next hour or so. And at 3 p.m., Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton. And at 5 p.m., Exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku. Do stay tuned. It's 2 o'clock.